This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
That's freaking fantastic. What a way to start the year. Everybody feeling good? Everybody miss baseball? Happy that baseball's back? We're all thrilled.
I feel like a schmuck. I think we all do. You know what? I may surprise you.
Rico Bronya Podcast.
Right, enough. We get it. It's the Rico Bronya Podcast.
Shut up already.
I'm going to surprise you with this. As depressing as this weekend was, and it was very, 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 very depressing. I was in Citi Field for all three of these games, all three of these just disasters. I am going to begin the Rico with some positive news. I really am. Deep from my soul when I say this. It's three effing games. That's where I'm coming. Deep in my soul, I want to remind you, it's three freaking games. Now, it feels like 13 games. It feels like this team is dead. It feels like any hope of optimism that I had for a few months died upon arrival. But as I was walking out of Citi Field on Sunday afternoon with both of my beautiful sons at my side and my wife looking at me like I had 15 heads, I thought to myself, we got a long way to go in this season. So as bad as Friday was, as bad as Saturday was, though Saturday they showed a little bit of guts, and as pathetic as Sunday was, before we get into all the details, before I read every angry email I received over the last 3 days, after we listen to angry voicemails, Pete's phone got over flooded with angry voicemails. We won't play all of them. We'll play a few of them. Before we get into all of the things that concern us moving forward, and there are plenty, I do at least want to start with that sense of hope that it's only three games. Now, here's the problem. This is the thing I find very, very difficult to kind of get over. You know, I'm a student of history. A lot of us are. And we as Met fans think back to past years. So when they lost on opening day this season in pathetic fashion, the comparison I used on the fan after the game that day was 2003, the Tom Glavine game, because that was pathetic. It was a different kind of pathetic, but it was very, very pathetic, right? It was a blowout at the hands of the Chicago Cubs. It was Tommy Glavine's debut. He got booed off the mound that day, and it turned out to be a sign of things to come. Opening day this year wasn't quite that, but it was pathetic in its own way. The fact that we only had one hit, Jeff McNeil's barking at Reese Hoskins, doesn't do anything about it, and it's had its own pathetic loss. So you think back to a year like that, you think back to an opening day like that, and you assume, okay, this season's going to go the way of 0-3, which is a disaster. We don't have a lot of 0-3s to look back on. And I know that sounds nuts, because for a franchise that has not had a lot of winning, you would think we've had a few 0-3s, and in my lifetime, which means most people listening's lifetime, you know how many 0-3s in Met history you've experienced? One. I'm not joking. One. And that was 2005, which is a very memorable beginning of the season. They actually began 0-5 that season. And there were some similarities in that they had a first-time manager who was a former Yankee coach. How about that? In Willie Randolph. And they lost the first five games, the first three in Cincinnati, the next two in Atlanta. They blew game one. That was the Braden Looper game. And they started the season 0-5. And I would tell you that, not that 2005 was any kind of great season, but they recovered and they had a season, right? They gave you something during that season. But my point is, we don't have a lot of 0-3s to look back on and say, yeah, we started 0-3 this year and things worked out, or we started 0-3 that year and things sucked. We literally have one, because the only other 3 years in the history of this franchise that we all, for some reason, root for, in which they started 0-3, was 62, 63, and 64. And quite frankly, those years don't count. And you know why those years don't count? Because not only was it 100 years ago, and I don't even mean it based on the years, I mean it based on how effing bad those teams were. Like, the 62 Mets is the hallmark of badness. And back then, they were almost, like, they didn't even give a crap if they were bad. They were bringing in former Brooklyn Dodgers, former New York Giants. And you don't even count those years. So I think the first thing that jumps out at you that's tough for us to put in our brain is we don't have comparisons. The Mets losing their first three games at home, A, has never happened. Like, think about that for a second. The Mets have never started a season by losing their first three games in their own building. It's never happened. So that's tough, because we look back and we have nothing to compare this to. This is just the feeling of today. So number one, we don't even have history to look back on when you get off to a start like this. Number two, it wasn't me, but a lot of Met fans, and I totally get why, did not come into this season with optimism. And I get it. Last year was a very disappointing season. This offseason, up until signing J.D. Martinez, for many, not all, was a disappointing offseason. And then you come out of the gate and you face things that cause these losses to occur that put the shiver down your spine. Things that are eerily familiar, okay? Number one, let's start off with the fact that they didn't show balls, right? That scares us. It scares us because of the way the 2022 season ended, with getting punked by the Atlanta Braves, not responding against San Diego. You think back to last year, you think back to all the guys that were hit by pitches, and how the Mets didn't do a damn thing about it. And this weekend was about getting punked by Rhys Hoskins. Maybe he didn't stick it to us in the finale of this series, when the Mets actually did a good job against him. He struck out in a big spot. He tapped into that little 1-2-3 double play. But we got punked by Rhys Hoskins. That's the bottom line. The Mets had a chance to retaliate by performing, and they didn't do it. And all the big guys on this team, not named Pete Alonso, who actually had a bunch of base hits, including the home run late in game two, but had a couple little served opposite field singles in game three of this series. But Francisco Lindor did dick. Brandon Nimmo did dick. And Jeff McNeil, who he's the one barking, did less than dick. Actually, he did have a base hit in the Sunday game. But bottom line is, they did next to nothing. Those three guys, three of the core four, dare I use that term, was 3-for-36 in this series. 3-for-36. Sometimes numbers will tell you everything. Three key guys on this roster: Nimmo, Lindor, McNeil, 3-for-36. That's number one. Number two, the cleanup spot. The cleanup spot is going to be the bane of our existence until J.D. Martinez decides he's ready to play Major League Baseball. And I, being in the building the last few days, J.D.'s taking some shrapnel, because I heard many a fan behind me, around me, saying, "Hey, J.D., you want to play baseball? Hey, J.D., how much time do you need to get into a effing batting cage and then show up and play baseball for us?" So J.D., who hasn't even done anything yet, is already taking the shrapnel from the angry Met fan. But the cleanup hitters, this is why I score games, folks. Watch this. Opening day, 0-for-3. That was Jeff McNeil. Day two of the season, Tyrone Taylor 0-for-3, DJ Stewart 0-for-2. That's 0-for-5. That's 0-for-8 so far from the cleanup spot. And then, finale of this series, Jeff McNeil cleanup 0-for-4. So not 0-for-12. That's what my math tells me. The cleanup spot, represented by Jeff McNeil, Tyrone Taylor, and a few at-bats late from DJ Stewart, 0-for-12. When you go 0 for 12 from your cleanup hitters, when you go 3 for 36 from three of your core players, there's a good chance you're going to get your ass kicked. Number three. Am I up to number three? Yeah, because I talked about, A, the balllessness of this team. That was a concern coming in. It continued over the first three games. Number two, I guess number two and number one got mixed together. Your big bats did nothing, which is essentially what I was just telling you with all those numbers. And then here's number three, the starting pitching, which I have politely asked as part of my formula for the Mets to be decent. Just be average. You don't have to be great. Just be average. All right, let's go through this. Let me go through my scorecard again and see how the starters did. 4 2/3 innings, two runs from Quintana. Just not enough innings. I mean, giving up two runs keeps you in the game, and they didn't hit, but 4 2/3 innings, not enough. Game two, Luis Severino actually gave the Mets the most innings they've gotten from a starter. 5 innings, 12 hits. And by the way, we're going to get deep into game two. Game two was screwed up by Zach Short. More on that later. That numbskull cost them the game early. He's not a numbskull, but I'm angry. What do you want me to say? Just like Spike Eskin doesn't really have daddy issues, I was just angry. But maybe he does have daddy issues. I guess that's possible. And then in game three, Tyler McGill gives us the 4 innings. He throws a million pitches. And oh, by the way, he needs an MRI. And Tyler McGill is putting a ton of guys on base. There's a lot of traffic. To McGill's credit, he's able to make the big pitch. Bottom line is, the starting pitching, which just needs to be average, didn't give him enough in these three games. But that's not the reason they got swept. They got swept because they couldn't hit. They lost game one because they couldn't hit. They lost game three because they couldn't hit. Game two, you know, they showed fight in the middle of that game offensively, but they didn't hit enough. And then going back to one, the ballessness factor, and I'm going to give you my emotions about what happened with Johan Ramirez because I was all over the place as this was occurring. So go back to game two. The Mets lose opening day. Rhys Hoskins punks all of us. We go back to game two of this series, and I'm sitting there with a buddy of mine. His name is Dennis. He's my go-to guy when my family can't come. And I say to Dennis, they gotta drill Rhys Hoskins immediately. You have to. Like, you want to send a message, you want to play this tough guy game, then you got to go after Rhys Hoskins. And they don't. And they don't. Right away, they do not go after Rhys Hoskins. And that kind of pissed me off, especially because in the first inning, it was a hit 'em spot because they were second and third and two outs. So if you're Carlos Mendoza, who's managing that game, and Rhys Hoskins comes up in that kind of spot where you're down 1-0 and there's second and third, two outs, and there's a guy named Oliver Dunn on deck, forget about us wanting to drill Rhys Hoskins. Forget that for a second. You wouldn't face Rhys Hoskins. You wouldn't face him. Why would you face him? You got a base open. He's been beating your ass for years, and there's something called Oliver Dunn on deck. So before we even get to show some balls and hit the guy, why are you facing him? There's no reason to face him with second and third, two outs, first inning. So either walk him or drill his ass. So what happens? First pitch! Hoskins rips the two-run double or two-run single, whatever it was, and basically set the tone for the game. So that annoyed me on so many levels. It annoyed me on the, hey, if you're going to do something, do it right away. But then B, this is the perfect time to do something. Now, the only risk you have with second and third two outs with a base open is if Luis Severino is as accurate as Johan Ramirez was, or as accurate as Sean Estes was, you're going to just throw a wild pitch and a run's going to score. So you got to drill him. And who am I mad at? I'm mad at the manager for that. Because, look, as much as I would have loved Luis Severino to take it upon himself to take care of business, and he should know better because Sevy's been around for a while, that's also on the manager. And the manager didn't do anything. And Severino didn't do anything. And to make matters worse, Rhys Hoskins rips a hit. Then the next time he comes up, not as obvious of a hit him spot, but if you want to hit him, it's right there for you. And he ends up hitting a two-run home run. And I'm sitting there at Citi Field like we all are. And I'm thinking to myself, we have been punked. We are complete utter losers. We're losers for sitting there. They're losers for not doing a damn thing about it. And the only positive and redeeming quality is, yeah, the Mets fall back. Yeah, they made it close. Yeah, when Alonso hits that home run in the ninth inning, they're back in the game. But they didn't come back. They didn't win the game. So their handling of Hoskins on Saturday was a part of this whole ballless thing. Because when Johan Ramirez finally throws behind him, I jumped out of my seat excited. I went right to Twitter. I tweeted, thank you, Johan. Now, the truth is, what am I really thanking him for? He didn't even hit him. And as Ron Darling said on the broadcast, as I think John Sterling even said on the Yankee broadcast, basically, as everybody has said, if you're going to hit Rhys Hoskins, or at least pitch behind Rhys Hoskins, as Johan Ramirez did, why are you waiting until he's already kicked your ass? Why? And what makes matters worse, I'm sorry I'm going back to the same freaking point because it annoys me, is that in the first inning, it was set up for you. So many times, I will always hear, well, you don't want to hit a guy there. You're giving them a base runner. You don't want to hit a guy there. You're starting a rally. In that situation in the first inning, hitting him there was the right baseball move. Like, where am I wrong here? And don't give me, it's the first inning. It's too early to walk him. It's Rhys Hoskins or it's Oliver Dunn. I mean, what are we doing? And they didn't do anything. And what really sucked about it is, so I'm happy Johan did something, and that's where I was when he threw behind Hoskins. I'm just desperate. Like, we're all desperate. We're freaking thirsty. We're in the Sahara Desert. We're looking for the Mets to show any kind of signs of balls. So when Johan throws behind him, yeah, there's a lot of things you could pick apart on it. But it's like, thank you for something. That was my attitude. Thank you for something. But yeah, like I'm sitting here now on the Rico with all of you, and it's, come on, man, you should have done it early. You got to hit him. I get that. But when he finally threw behind him, I'm just like, thank you for something. But this is the problem with this weekend. It's not simply the three losses. It's these things that led up to the three losses. It's these things that remind you of last year. And then I'm sitting there with my buddy Dennis, after Johan throws behind him, and Carlos Mendoza comes out. And I look at Dennis, and I say, he's got to get ejected. Like, even if it's got to be faux anger, okay? Even if it's, what am I really yelling about? Look, how many times have we seen managers just have to put on a show? Carlos Mendoza needs to put on a show, A, for us, because we have no loyalty to him. We know nothing about him so far. And so far, what do we know? Are we happy? Are we thrilled with Carlos Mendoza? I'm not burying the guy by any stretch, but I'm saying there's your chance to give us that little, you know, cheap pop almost, right? Scream and yell, throw your hat down, Johan got screwed, storm off the field. Instead, Carlos is having essentially a tea party. That's what he's doing. He's having a tea party. He's like, hey, Les Diaz, what's up? Let's hang out. You having a good time? Oh, good. All right. Yeah. I guess I'll leave now. Meanwhile, Mendoza's going to get suspended. It's obvious he's going to get suspended. He was suspended. We all know that now. But in the moment, like, Johan Ramirez and Carlos Mendoza, fair or not, they're going to get suspended. We all know that. It's obvious he threw at him. Mendoza's excuses after the game are laughable. But what else is he going to say? He can't admit that he threw after him. Instead, he gives the, well, you got to pitch inside. Yeah, you got to come up and in. And that's the way Johan throws. So if you're going to get suspended, right? And Johan's already been thrown out of the game. Just get your effing money's worth. Would that have made me feel like a tiny bit better as we're sitting here on the Rico today? Maybe like a tiny bit, maybe like a small amount, but do something. Because it reminded me of every freaking manager over the last bunch of years. Not every one of them, because Terry had a little fire plug to him. Bobby Valentine had a fire plug to him. But one of the criticisms of Willie Randolph, Buck Showalter, was, you're just going out and having a conversation. Yell and scream. Your team's getting their ass kicked. Do something about it. So that the whole thing from Saturday just drove me nuts.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Ev, the one thing that you're missing here, and I do agree, like the handling on Saturday was terrible, but what about Friday? Like, did McNeil, you know, I kept on hearing from people that McNeil should have done something as well.
Yeah, no, we did the Rico after opening day, and I said he should have. So going back to Friday.
To do?
But could have punched him in the face. He could have curb stomped him like Seth Rollins.
Dude, he was laying down like a beach whale. Rhys Hoskins laid there like a supermodel, like posing for a picture. Look, if you do that, it's going to be even dirtier, and McNeil's going to look cheaper. He couldn't do anything.
Okay, so if you're saying he couldn't do anything Friday, then what the hell did you want them to do on Friday other than actually, you know, hit in the eighth and ninth inning, which they didn't do?
Well, they should. Exactly. That the point is that the bench, they couldn't do anything to Rhys Hoskins till he got to the bench. At that point in time, the team should have just exploded. And that's the point where you nailed it. The first at bat, Rhys Hoskins got to get hit.
Well, it's not only the first at bat. It's set up where you should put him on base anyway. You shouldn't face him. Like, if we weren't even talking about hitting Rhys Hoskins, I promise you, even if half of you listening rolled your eyes, I'd be bitching that Mendoza faced him in the first inning. You're down 1-0. There's second and third and two out. Oliver Dunn's on deck. Rhys Hoskins has tortured this franchise. He's a good professional baseball player. Why are you facing him?
No, you're right. I mean, listen, the whole weekend was a buzzkill for that. We were tipping the cap to Yoan Ramirez, but he didn't do anything. Like you said, he didn't do anything anyway. But at least you see some sort of fight. Maybe something like someone's got to click to this team. Because let me put it this way. It's going to be a long season if they play the way they did, but it's going to be another soft season if they have zero fight. Dude, they can't keep on getting hit by pitches. They can't keep on, like, bitching to the umps. They can't bitch to the, you know, whomever. There needs to be a brawl. I mean, I'm sorry to say it. I don't like the condone fighting, but that's what they need to do.
Yeah, this was the series to do it, if you think that makes any damn difference. And by the way, looking at this baseball team over the last few years, I'm not sure it even would have. Like, they could have drilled Rhys Hoskins in the first inning. I don't know what would have happened other than satisfying our own bloodthirsty needs. But look, the truth is they also played like crap. And I don't want to bury that. They have played like crap. I went through the numbers on the key offensive players. They played like garbage. And here's the other thing. You know, all I heard about from David Stearns and Carlos Mendoza is how good defensively this team is going to be. Go back to that first inning on Saturday. Luis Severino's on the mound, a big crowd at Citi Field. It's the first day of the real season. Opening day is a holiday. Opening day is an event. But once you get to day two, it's like normalcy is back. And here's Luis Severino, right? Trying to prove that he can get back to what he was 5 years ago. And he starts the game off by striking out Sal Frelick. And I'm like, all right, here we go. Sevy is ready to roll. And then he gives up a ground ball to third base off the bat of William Contreras. And I don't give a crap how it was scored. I don't give a crap what I wrote down in my book. It is an error on Zach Short. It's a ground ball to third. And Zach Short, who is literally only on this team for his glove. That's why he's here. Okay? The reason why Mark Vientos didn't make the team, besides the fact they probably don't believe in the guy, and he's liking messages on Instagram that basically make the Mets look like tools. We'll get to that a little bit later on if we have time. I apologize. This Rico could be like 3 hours tonight if we wanted. But I'm cranky. I'm tired. I actually saw LeBron James come to Brooklyn, brought my oldest son to a Etz doubleheader, which featured two brutal losses. It teaches him character. So I don't know how long we're going to go. But there's a million things to get to. I have to do a Rico every freaking day this season. But William Contreras, it's a ground ball to third, and Zach Short, who is literally on this team for one reason. He's here for his defense, and he makes a miscue. And I looked over to my friend, and I said, we're screwed. Like, the tone has already been set. You know, unless Luis Severino could just find a way to make this not matter, this is going to be a freaking nightmare. Next batter, Christian Yelich single. Next batter, Willie Adames RBI double. And that set up, you know, what we were talking about with Rhys Hoskins. But sometimes there's a moment and there's a play early in a game. Buck used to say this about Nimmo, that sometimes Nimmo's first at bat would change the game. And sometimes he was right. You know, a 10-pitch at bat, work out a walk, could change the whole game. I believe this deep in my soul. I don't give a crap what anyone else thinks. Maybe you think I'm nuts. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I went to too many games this weekend. I don't know. Zach Short screwed up game two. I'm convinced of that. Because if he makes the play, there are two outs and nobody on. And Sevy, you know, maybe gives up a hit. Maybe gives up a hit. But I don't think he implodes and gives up the three runs and puts the Mets behind like immediately, which is the world we're living in. I mean, think about Saturday and Sunday. They're down 3-0 before your ass is comfortable on the seat. They score a run to make it 3-1. Then they're down 5-1. Then they make it 5-2. Then they're down 6. Then they're down 7-2. Look at Sunday's game. Before you sit down, it's 1-0. Then it's 2-0. Then they make it 2-1. Then they're down 4-1. They can never come back. They've been playing from behind from the beginning. And look at opening day. It was the same thing. They had like that early lead that lasted for 5 seconds. So the Mets have played for 3 innings this season with a lead. Outside of that, I think they've trailed every inning. So there's 27 innings. So what? They've trailed for 21, 22 out of 27 innings. But that Zach Short play was a killer. Sometimes there's the one play that just screws you up. As far as the rest of that game was concerned, Edwin Diaz came in to pitch the ninth inning, and it was a debate. Me and my buddy were going like, do you want to go to Edwin today? Do you hold him off in case there's a safe situation on Sunday? And my attitude was get him in the game. Get him in the game. Get him off the snide. Get him back in a major league game. We all gave him this huge ovation that he obviously deserves. And you don't know if there's going to be a safe situation Sunday, which there wasn't. And what also killed them on Saturday, after they fall behind and they're fighting back, and it always seems to happen when you give up the insurance run, and Adam Ottavino did it because God forbid he holds a guy on. But Sal Frelick stole second base. It turned into an RBI when Yelich drove him in. That insurance run turned out to be the difference in the game. Big, big run given up by Adam Ottavino. And Saturday was, you know, sort of encouraging because Marte got on base three more times. It was encouraging because Francisco Alvarez had three hits and hit that laser beam of a home run. It was encouraging because Brett Beatty came off the bench. Then you see Pat Murphy go lefty-lefty, and Beatty hits a home run anyway on the first pitch. Like, those are all legitimately positive things. But ultimately, you leave Citi Field as a loser, and the Mets lose. And there's more kind of negativity than the positivity that you can find from those things I mentioned, which is, look, Starling Marte looks relatively healthy. That's a great thing. Brett Beatty at a home run off of a lefty. That's a really good thing. Francisco Alvarez and Pete Alonso look pretty damn good. That's an encouraging thing. I mean, Alvarez ended up following it up on Sunday by getting on base three times, even though he struck out in a big spot in the eighth inning. Beatty kind of had a soft 1-for-4, but the home run against the lefty was nice. It was all nice, but they lost. That's the bottom line. And then you go into Sunday. My family's back in town. Why not spend Easter at Citi Field watching the New York Mets? And oh my God, was that. That, again, first inning set the tone for the whole freaking game. You got to walk to the leadoff hitter, which is just disgusting to start a game. Tyler picks him off. So it's like, here we go. All right, get through an inning. Then you get a catcher's interference. This was some weekend. A Zach Short error that wasn't called an error on Saturday to set the tone. And then you've got the Omar Narvaez catcher's interference followed by Adames hitting a line drive to third base that, I'm sorry, Brett Beatty's got to catch. He's got to catch it. So the Mets go down 1-0 on a catcher's interference. And Brett Beatty, who's got an effing hole in his glove, not being able to catch a line drive off the bat of Willy Adames. And the only positive was, I don't even know if this is a positive. This is me making the best out of bad situations. I believe that as a season ticket holder this year, and I'm not complaining, this is the world we live in, Met tickets have no value. They're useless. So essentially, I ain't going to get any money back from my Met. I'm going to go when I go, and when I don't go, I'm probably going to give them to people listening on the Rico. That may be a new segment. I may be giving away Evan's Met tickets. So one option is, and it is a cool feature they give season ticket holders, is they allow you to trade tickets and then pay the difference if you up your value. So on a day like today, I knew to get my wife on Easter Sunday, to have my kids happy at Citi Field, first game of the season, I traded up. So I traded a game in July I know I can't go to, for the Hyundai Club. Now, one thing about Citi Field and all the changes that they've made, the changes are very good if you're spending top dollar for tickets. They're not very good if you're spending an average amount of money for tickets. So I mentioned on Friday on the Rico, guy like me, I sit in the 300s. We got screwed this year. That's just the reality. We used to have this private entrance. Now we don't, and we have higher ticket prices. That's just us, and it's annoying, sucks. We could cry about it. But in other areas of the ballpark, if you spend more money, and I'm sure there are plenty of people listening to the Rico who spend the top dollar, maybe they don't spend any money. Maybe they don't give a crap when I talk about this stuff. Totally fine. But in the other areas of the ballpark, they did an amazing job. I'll be the first to tell you. They got more TV screens. They got more food options. These premium seats are very, very good. So I sat in a premium seat for Sunday's game in which I traded in a higher valued game, paid the difference, and then sat there. So if I thought about what I really paid, it was ridiculously stupid. But when you trade Pete and then pay the difference, it doesn't feel like you're spending as much money. Does that make sense?
No. No, 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 it does. I get it. Because you already bought the ticket. So the upgrade. I get it. But listen, you're still spending a ton of money. But serious question here. After all that, does your wife want to go back to another game anytime soon?
I tell you, she loved the Hyundai Club. I mean, the Hyundai Club is that, first of all, it's a great seat. So for a geek like me, scoring the game, teaching baseball to my kids, the Hyundai Club has one of the best views of the ballpark. You're like low down. You got a little bit of height. And then it's all included food, which my youngest son, Spence, he was ripping through everything. Like he was in a freaking heaven. Jet doesn't eat as much. He's like, yeah, it's pretty cool. The free waters. Like it was a great experience for the family. So from that standpoint, they all had a good time. Now, when we're watching the game, and I'm explaining very politely to both my sons how much our team sucks right now, that was frustrating. Not going to lie about that. When Brett Beatty's letting the ball go through his glove, like it ain't fun. But the experience on Sunday was a different experience because I was trying to be the father and we're sitting in premium seats. But I forgot why I brought this whole story up. I don't know if there was a reason other than I was there for Sunday's game. Yeah, I was there for the loss, in which, again, we're down 1-0. Then we're down 2-0. Tyler McGill is doing his absolutely typical thing where he's throwing a million pitches. But I give him a little bit of credit, especially for that third inning. Because the third inning, down 2-1, after the Mets got one of those runs back on the Tyrone Taylor hit, it looked like McGill was going to give the game away. It looked like this game was going to be over Easter Sunday in the fourth inning when he loaded the bases up. He walked back-to-back guys, Yelich and Adames, and then he drills, I think it was Oliver Dunn on a 3-2 pitch. So it was essentially a walk. And here's Hoskins with the bases loaded, and he falls behind him. I think he was behind him 3-0 or 2-1. I'm trying to remember specifically because at this point, I was walking to Kitty Field with my sons watching the game. I am a multitasker to the extreme, my friend. And as we were walking, I said, hey, boys, let's watch this Hoskins pitch. So I pick up Spence, put him on my shoulders. I got Jet. And then Hoskins taps into the 1-2-3 double play. And I'm like stunned. Like I couldn't freaking believe it. I'm like, wow, Reese Hoskins did not murder us this time. And somehow Tyler McGill was able to get out of that bases loaded one out jam and at least keep the game close.
When you were doing your ventures on Sunday, did you run into the Hall of Fame at all or no? Because I heard they're on the opposite side of the field. Does that make sense?
Very glad you brought that up. So, yes, they moved a lot of things around. So what I was able to notice during my ventures when I got to Kitty Field and then Spence decides he didn't want to hit a Kitty Field, so he walked to Kitty Field and never did it.
And then... I'm shaking my head because I know that pain.
Oh, God, it was something else. And then I was hoping Mr. Met would be there because he loves himself some Mr. Met. So right near Kitty Field, they used to have the season ticket club. That club is now like a very tiny museum that didn't appear open, by the way. So I didn't have a chance to go in it, but it looks like the championship trophies are there. It looks like it's a tiny museum. The season ticket little room that they used to have was moved kind of closer to the right field line. So they've moved a lot of stuff around. Look, I want to make this clear. I don't love personally, I don't love the fact they got rid of the Mets Hall of Fame, but they did not wilp on this thing. It's not like you can't tell the Mets play there, which unfortunately when Citi Field first opened was a lot like that. I'm not saying they did that. Right now, I just don't know where anything is. You know, so you have the Hall of Fame plaques once you get up the escalator at the rotunda, and then you've got things scattered all around the ballpark. But yeah, I found like a mini Hall of Fame museum that was out there. Now back to McGill, we'll mix back into the baseball. So Tyler McGill gets through that third inning, pitches a very quick fourth inning. He comes out of the game. And off the top, I'm looking at the pitch count. It's in the high 70s, but why not squeeze out a fifth inning from him? Like, why not? We later find out from interim manager John Gibbons, because Mendy was suspended, that McGill felt some tenderness and he's going for a precautionary MRI. Are you freaking kidding me? And we all know where this is going. I mean, does any of us think Tyler McGill is making his next start? But then I guess the follow-up is, do you care if he makes his next start? Because The answer is Jose Budo or Joey Lucchesi. And you could certainly argue Tweedledee, Tweedledum. What the hell's it? And not that I want McGill to get hurt, especially with his new pitch. I want to see him have that shot. This feels like his last shot. And again, I don't think he was horrible on Sunday. I mean, four innings, two runs is not acceptable because, and by the way, one of them was earned because that first run was unearned because of the catcher's interference, if you care about that kind of stuff. Really just bookkeeping. But he wasn't bad. He was just typical that he threw a million pitches and wasn't able to go deep in the game. And now all of a sudden you're asking Johan Ramirez, and that was so predictable when Johan came in. Basically, the Mets said, look, he's been suspended three games. We're appealing it, but we could drop it at any point. Let's make him get through as much of this game as possible. He wouldn't be available for the next 3 days anyway. And that is a typical, we'll take advantage of the suspension rule move. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing illegal with it. You know, burn him out in the fifth, sixth, and seventh inning. And he wasn't great either because he allowed two more runs to score. So it took this 2-1 game and made it a 4-1 game. But the Mets basically, that was very predictable. Let's burn Johan out. We'll drop the appeal on the suspension. And then it doesn't matter because he wasn't going to pitch anyway. By the way, I didn't know Mendoza was suspended until I saw Gibbons holding up his hands during one of the replay questions.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
So maybe if you're watching on TV, they probably brought it up immediately. I read Tim Healy tweeted out that the guys had no idea till MLB announced it. Well, yeah. How else are they going to know? I mean, you know, I don't think Billy Epler. I keep doing that. I don't think David Stearns is getting the heads up. Like, MLB suspended him, and then everybody finds out. And, you know, we dealt with John Gibbons for a day. So that was fun.
Yeah, I think that the suspension came sort of late today, this morning, or whatever it is. Whenever they announced it, it came kind of late.
I don't know when it came. I think, to me, when I do family days at the ballpark, I'm not on Twitter. I don't know. I see the lineup. I see the game. I don't think I ever would have known other than looking inside the dugout and not seeing Carlos Mendoza.
And let's be serious about the suspension real quick here. Like, he didn't hit him. What are we getting suspended for?
You know the way it is.
No.
He threw out his head.
I get it. But also, you're telling me that's worse than Rhys Hoskins slotting into McNeil the way it did? McNeil got spiked and elbowed in his knee.
I mean, look, Rhys Hoskins slid late, no question about it. But guys aren't getting suspended for that. You're just ruling it a double play. That's all you're doing.
And they
there is a rule in baseball. You can't throw it a batter on purpose. And look, he did. Like that's the problem with me bitching about the suspension. There's a rule on the books that says you can't purposely throw at somebody, right? Ask yourself, did Johan Ramirez throw at him? Of course he did.
He missed.
It doesn't matter. Did he? Okay. Was he Carlos Mendoza after the game said he was just pitching inside. Do you think that was it? Or do you think he threw at him? What do you think?
No, of course he was throwing at him.
Well, okay. I hope. All right. Well, that there you go. So what the hell are you going to do? Oh, yeah, yeah. And that game sucked. Because again, the bats went down lifeless. That was the other problem. You're down 4-1. You know, remember, this is a Brewer bullpen without its best closer in Devin Williams. So why you're making, you know, Brian Hudson and Yoel Piamps look amazing and Abner Uribe is all of a sudden like the next great closer in baseball. I mean, that was the frustrating part. Like, you're down 4-1. The game's not officially over. Like, Colin Ray is not a superstar. Now you're in the Brewer bullpen and the Mets did nothing. They put together meek rallies. They got the two-out double by Marte in the eighth inning. Alvarez struck out. They did nothing in the ninth inning. They had like a mini rally in the sixth inning with a one-out single by Alvarez, and then Beatty struck out. Like, just lifeless. The bats were absolutely terrible, and the guys that need to perform did not perform. Brandon Nimmo did nothing. Francisco Lindor did nothing. Jeff McNeil did nothing, and we got swept. And are we in Panic City? Yeah, why not? That's who we are. We live in Panic City as Met fans. We live in it. Now let's get to some of your emails. We'll mix in some voicemails as well. The RicoB@gmail.com is the email. The voicemail, which you could leave at any point, and I know Pete got a lot of them over the last few days. The number to call is 725. I nailed it. 725-222-8699. That's the voicemail you can use anytime, whenever you're upset, when you're happy, when you're angry. There's a lot of these freaking emails, and I'm going to avoid the ones that are talking about my work situation because who gives a crap, all right? Ian Nolan writes, Mark Vientos liked the Brewers team tweet of Hoskins' two-run home run. Something, nothing, or oops, I clicked the wrong button. Yeah, so I'm still figuring out the whole like button thing on Instagram. I don't fully, I have to admit, understand it. But the way I guess, read it is that it was a picture of Rhys Hoskins and how he stuck it to the Mets, which he did. And Mark Vientos was featured on a like. It says, I think it's from Bleacher Report walk-off. It says, Rhys Hoskins silences Mets crowd with two-run shot. And it's a picture of Rhys with his arm up. Okay, so that's the image. And Mark Vientos likes it. Now, as somebody that doesn't like tweets, like I just don't. I don't understand the point of the feature. So I'm not a liker. Doesn't mean I hate your tweets. Doesn't mean I don't know why I would like a tweet. What's the point? Hoff, are you a liker? Do you like tweets or Instagrams or something like that?
Yeah, I don't do Instagram so much, but I am a liker on Twitter. I don't know why. I have this gnat of like acknowledging. That's basically what it is. I acknowledge that I saw it.
Okay, so is it in the like community, when you like something, like Rhys Hoskins silences Mets crowd with two-run shot, is that something he should not like?
Oh, yeah. That is a negative, that's a net negative from Mark Vientos. Let's put it that way.
Now, do you think he did that by accident, or you think he's being a douche? Which one
I
is
don't
it?
Think, it, now, maybe I'm wrong. I haven't looked into it, but tell me, has anybody, it's a screenshot that I saw, but I could make my name and change it to Mark Vientos. Does anybody really know if Mark Vientos liked it?
No, I honestly, I don't know. And I don't have enough care to do the research to find out. I also was told Luis Angel Acuna liked it too, which doesn't make any sense.
Did Jeff McNeil like it? That's what I want to know.
Now that would be something. Did Pete Alonso like it?
Yeah. Oh,
and basically say, get me to Milwaukee. Truthfully, I don't make that much of it. I mean, I don't know. You know, what we see on social media now from athletes, like deleting their account or ignoring the team they play on and eliminating it or liking a tweet. I don't know. I do think you can like a tweet accidentally. Like I told you, I don't like tweets. And I guess it was like a year ago. I went into the likes column just to see. And I had two random tweets that were liked. Now, luckily, they neither were offensive. They were just random. Like if you ever went into my likes, you would have said, what? Okay, that's just irrelevant. So it is possible to like a tweet by accident, but this one seems too coincidental. So maybe he's a baby. I don't know. Howie writes, trying to stay calm and cool-headed. The Mets, Astros, White Sox, and Marlins are winless to start the season. We all know the Astros should be making the playoffs, so this is how I'm comforting myself. So I won't start to despair even though it's only three games. By the way, that is all fair. And I think that part of the sentence we all understand. Being 0-3 is not a death sentence. Now, being 3-17 may be a death sentence. You don't want to get to that point. But being 0-3 is not a death sentence. It's just very depressing. Now, what he goes on to write is the concerning part. That being said, the Brewers flat out played the Mets in every way. He is right. Hitting, pitching, running, defense. He's so right. They made more plays than us. We had defensive miscues. I pointed out two that jumped out at me. Three, Zach Short, Brett Beatty, Omar Narvaez. Only one of them counts as an error, by the way. That's why sometimes errors can be completely overrated. Watch the games. You'll know if defense is good or bad. In fact, they reminded me a little of the 2022 Mets, the Brewers, by making our pitchers throw 20-plus pitches during the first inning and taking advantage of walks and poor fielding. The 2024 Mets feel a lot like the ones from 2023. Thank you, Howie. That's the problem. The problem with an 0-3 start sometimes is it builds off of last year and makes you think about last year. What the Yankees were able to do with their 4-0 start is make you think that this team that they have is completely different than the team from a year ago. All the Mets have done is build off of our struggles from a year ago. I get one more email, then we'll do voicemail. We'll go back and forth. So we try to get you involved on this Sunday into Monday, Rico. Jimmy writes, you said it.
I did?
Evan, you said the consensus was that spring training had a more relaxed feel for the team this year, and it showed.
Yeah, I did say that, but I didn't think it was going to turn into this.
The defense was terrible, especially Beatty. Him and Narvaez cost McGill a clean first inning. Pete didn't have a great defensive series either. The bats woke up late in game two, but besides that, they came out of spring training lifeless. I won't go off on Jeff McNeil too much, but I'd like your thoughts on Hoskins this series. I'd have a problem with his slide, although Jeff did. You said it, Evan, all bark, no bite. Hoskins kept quiet and kicked the crap out of the team the rest of the series, while McNeil hit weak ground balls and pop-ups to second base. The team looked unprepared and lifeless, but hey, I'm glad they had a fun spring. I don't necessarily think the Mets having a basketball hoop and being more relaxed as compared to the Buck years is why they started 0-3. So I won't take credit for saying I called it. I didn't call this. I said they're more relaxed. Now, you could take that however you want based on the results. You can spin it however you want. But the part I do agree with Jimmy about is Jeff McNeil. If you are so angry, you do something about it. And not necessarily like we were talking earlier about punching and fighting and kicking, but by performing. Rhys Hoskins bitched us all out. He did. He performed. He didn't do anything on Sunday, but he certainly set the tone on Saturday. He had the ultimate F you back to us. All right. Pete hit me with a voicemail.
Yeah. The word for the day, gentlemen, is gutless. Gutless. Severino blew it. And like you, Evan, has said over and over for the last couple of years, they got no heart, none. Thank you.
Well, I was quick and to the point. Unfortunately, these three games felt that way. And what they need to do now, and I don't know how many of these games they're going to get to play against Detroit because there is some horrible, horrible rain in the forecast, but this is the beauty of baseball. It's why baseball is my favorite sport. You have the ability to change the story immediately. Immediately. Lifeless, ballless, terrible offense, terrible. Like, all of that happened over these three games. There's no sugarcoating it. But what you have a chance to do now is go win three in a row. Now, I'm not telling you they're going to. I don't think any of us feel confident. But the beauty of baseball is you have the ability to change everything that guy said in the voicemail immediately by winning a game two or three. I was hoping they were going to do that Saturday. I was hoping they were going to do that Sunday. They did neither. Let's take a listen to another angry voicemail.
It's game two, and they already have the shittiest fucking lineup they could possibly come up with when they could have done this in spring training. Why is Taylor batting cleanup, and why is Zach short playing, and they're already benched Baby? This is a fucking dog shit lineup. Mendoza clearly doesn't know what he's doing. What the fuck is going on here? Are they just trying to get people to snap already in game two? If game one wasn't bad enough, this will definitely send people right over the edge.
You know, if Francisco Alvarez was hitting cleanup in game two, which is what I would want. Like I said during the spring training, Ricos, for those that weren't listening to spring training, Rico, but now you tune in because the regular season counts. Welcome, by the way. Thank you for downloading and subscribing or watching on YouTube or however the hell you're consuming Rico Bronya. I want Alvarez hitting cleanup. Now, Alvarez went 3-for-4 and hit a home run on Saturday, batting seventh. Seventh. Now, I try not to get nuts about batting orders. Like, I have opinions about it, but it's usually not life or death. But when you have Tyrone Taylor hitting cleanup, and I said, I went on with Beningo on Saturday, and I said, you know what, Joe, we're going to get a this is baseball Susan moment from Tyrone Taylor. He's going to get a bunch of hits. We're all freaking out that he's hitting cleanup. He's going to come through. He goes 0-for-3. And the worst part is, you know, Mendy, you should know, Mendy, that Tyrone Taylor is probably going to get pinch hit for late in the game. So now all of a sudden, when you use DJ Stewart, you've got DJ Stewart hitting cleanup. Think about that. Nah, it was stupid. And I think he's got to learn from this. Until J.D. Martinez decides he wants to play baseball, can you hit Francisco Alvarez cleanup? Can you do that for a myriad of reasons? Number one, he's better than whoever you're going to hit cleanup. He's a power threat, and you're not pinch hitting for him. When you use a guy in cleanup who has a chance of being pinch hit for, think about how different now your lineup looks. So I want to take you back to the ninth inning and show you why Alvarez batting seventh and Tyrone Taylor batting cleanup turned out to be, yes, as our last voicemailer said, one of the stupidest bleeping decisions you'll see. Let me walk you through this slowly. You ready? So ninth inning, they're down by two runs. Lindor hits this just weak pop up to second base, and then Pete hits a home run. It's his first home run of the season. Mets are down by a run. There's one out. They're down by a run. There's nobody on base. And guess who's up? The cleanup hitter. Guess who the cleanup hitter was? DJ effing Stewart. If Francisco Alvarez is batting cleanup, he comes up. Mr. Dramatic. Mr. I got balls. He's the one guy who actually you look at and say, hey, you know, he may have balls. How many big hits did he have last year? Instead, Alvarez doesn't come up. DJ Stewart strikes out. Starling Marte strikes out. And Alvarez doesn't get a fifth at-bat. Why did he get a fifth at-bat? He didn't get a fifth at-bat because he was batting seventh instead of fourth. Instead of fifth. I mean, you could have hit him fifth. So whenever we argue about lineups, and I don't mean to pick on you here, Pete, but when we talk about you had that dumb idea about hitting Brandon Immo ninth, a part of it is you don't want to give up plate appearances from your better hitters. So in the case of Alvarez batting seventh on Saturday against a lefty and Tyrone Taylor batting cleanup, is you gave the cleanup spot a better opportunity to get an extra plate appearance, and down by a run, they could have used Francisco Alvarez coming up. So yes, it sucked. And it turned out to be a very idiotic decision in day number two from Carlos Mendoza.
And I know that you called my lineup idiotic and dumb that I put Nimmo ninth, but so far, Nimmo has looked like crap. McNeil's looked like crap. The only people that are hitting are Alonso and Alvarez, really.
Well, what does that mean? Is this backing your point that Nimmo should hit ninth? Stop it.
Yes.
No, it's not. John Finnegan writes, DH nightmare. Evan, 0 for 12 this series from the four hole. Yep, we talked about that. Absolutely zero reason to have Alvarez or Marte outside of the cleanup spot with JD getting ready. McNeil does not drive players in. Never has, never will. He's abysmal. Enough. Better not see this tomorrow. And by tomorrow, he means Monday night against the Detroit Tigers. That's John from Connecticut. Yeah, I think right now, also as a reward, I believe sometimes in rewarding people when they get off to good starts. I know you guys don't want me to mention the Yankees, but I will briefly. I commend Aaron Boone for what he did with Oswaldo Cabrera. Oswaldo Cabrera had no business being the opening day third baseman. He was because John Birdie didn't get enough sleep the night before. Okay, fine. Oswaldo starts, and he has a big opening day. And I said it on the air the next day. Got to play him again. Got to play him again. Like, what are we doing? And he did. And guess what? He hit again. Like, I think too many times managers don't reward people for what they're doing, even in such a brief period of time, like one game or two games. So I bring this up because on Monday night, assuming the Mets play a baseball game against the Detroit Tigers, and I think they will play Monday. I was looking at the weather Monday. I think they will get the game in. I think Tuesday and Wednesday are probably the days where things will look a little bit fishier. But why don't you reward Francisco Alvarez by batting him cleanup? You're facing a young righty by the name of Reese Olson, who we're going to hear after the game. Boy, he has nasty stuff. How good was he? Reward Francisco Alvarez by batting him cleanup. That's what I would do. And look, you could do Starling Marte as well because he is off to a pretty good start. He got on base three times on Sunday, drew a couple of walks, had some really good at-bats. Like that at-bat in the first inning, I thought had a chance to turn the game back in the Mets' favor on Saturday when he had a long at-bat and drew a walk. And then he had another one. I guess that was Sunday. I get these days confused. It was Saturday where he had the great at-bat. But you want to hit him cleanup, hit him cleanup. I have no problem with that. I'd go Alvarez, but I think you should reward the guys that have actually showed a pulse over the first three games of this season. Let's take a listen to another voicemail.
Hey, boys. Calling in after the Saturday Brewers game. First off, just want to say, Evan, took a photo with me and my dad outside of the stadium. Thank you very much. Very polite man. Think the beard looks better in person. Also put my arm around your shoulder. Not sure if that was weird for you. Two, why didn't they just drill Hoskins in the first plate appearance? Like, I get you probably worry that 70 gets tossed, but whatever. It's the second game of the season. You get the boys fired up. Makes no sense. I don't know if that's an actual reflection on Mendoza, but just letting him walk all over you and then dinging him after that makes you look pretty weak. Like, you have to wait until he hits a homer, has three RBIs before you actually make a move on him. Not the smartest, in my opinion. Number three, am I crazy to be excited about this team right now? I mean, Beatty going Yabo off of Milner, coming in, lefty on lefty, lower arm slot, no one believes in him, tapping that first pitch. Alvey looking like a monster, and Pete coming through. I don't know. Bullpen seems okay. Starting pitching, that's a big question mark, but I don't know. After the game, I'm feeling a lot better than I did after opening day. Curious how you guys are thinking. Appreciate it, boys. See ya.
Well, I'll say this. That was after Saturday's game. So I don't know if Sunday brought him back down. There are positives that you can take. No question about it. Brett Beatty hitting a home run off a lefty. I mentioned it. Hobie Milner, a positive. Starling Marte looking healthy, positive. Francisco Alvarez looking to build off of what was a up and down but impressive rookie season. No doubt. Those things exist. But they're 0-3. And they've been outplayed on every aspect of the field. So, yeah, I think you're crazy to take this and feel good. Now, what's not crazy, in fact, I will stand by this, is I'm not one to just feel completely different about a team because of three games. Okay? So for anyone who disagreed with me about my hope for this season, which I respect, by the way, I'm not coming to you hat in hand after three games to say, boy, I was wrong. They suck. I know it feels that way because these were three brutal games and it was a terrible way to start the year. Almost the worst way imaginable to start a year, especially with now an injury to Tyler McGill. So I will definitely, as I said at the very, very top, remind you it's only three games and not give up on a season and change every opinion I had based on three games. It takes more than that. Now, I don't know what that number is. It's different for all of us. We all come to our conclusions at different moments. Maybe it'll take 30 games. Maybe it'll only be five. Hey, look, they get swept by Detroit. Maybe I'm sitting here on the Wednesday night Rico freaking out, saying they suck. They're done. This is a disaster. We're going to lose 100 games. I don't know. But it is very difficult to walk away from three losses and say, you know what? I feel okay. It's very difficult to feel okay. Now, what do we have coming up? We got three games against the Detroit Tigers, who are off to a pretty good start. They're 3-0. So give Detroit credit. They got an interesting, young, feisty team. They did beat Chicago, so we got to keep that in mind. But look, you got to beat what's in front of you. Sean Manaea is going to make his Met debut on Monday night against this young righty by the name of Reese Olson. Adrian Hauser is going to make his debut for the New York Mets on Tuesday in game two of this series. They're going to face another righty. Casey Mize will pitch Tuesday's game. And then we get the opening day rematches, if you will. All the aces come back on Wednesday night, assuming they play. Jose Quintana versus Skubal, who pitched great in his first game. And he's a damn good young pitcher, this Tarik Skubal. So that'll be tough. That's a lefty on Wednesday. Now, how many of these games are they going to play? This is tricky now because the Tigers only come in once. They have a common off day on Thursday. So you got that going for you because Detroit's going to play their home opener on Friday afternoon against Oakland. So Thursday is a complete open day. So what I would guess is that if they rain a game out, I think they just play Thursday. If they rain two games out and they can't play Tuesday or Wednesday, I think we're getting a very early doubleheader on Thursday. But those are all things to keep in mind, because if they have to play a doubleheader on Thursday, that's impactful, because now the Mets will play two games Thursday, Friday against Cincinnati, Saturday against Cincinnati, Sunday against Cincinnati, Monday against Atlanta, Tuesday against Atlanta, Wednesday against Atlanta, Thursday against Atlanta, Friday against Kansas City, Saturday against Kansas City, Sunday against Kansas City, Monday against Pittsburgh. So my point is they won't have an off day for a while. That is a tricky spot if they end up having to play a doubleheader on Thursday. In fact, having that be an off day is actually sort of important when you look at the amount of games the Mets are going to have to play in a row without an off day. Their next off day, after they play or have the off day on Thursday the 4th, is Thursday the 18th. So that's a two-week run of playing every single day before they get an off day. So keep an eye on that because the weather does not look good for early this week against Detroit. I hope the rain holds up, man, because I want them to play as often as possible early and get off the snide so we can start feeling better about ourselves.
Before we go, I do want to throw one more voicemail out there. Is that cool?
I'm afraid if Hoff is pushing this voicemail in, that makes me think we're in store for a good one. So go ahead, make my day.
Rico, Bronya, hey, Pete. You two, Evan. I hate to sound like Captain Obvious here, but same shit, different year. Can't get that two-out base hit, that big hit when needed. Same shit, different year.
Later. It sounded like Frank the Tank, didn't it?
It might be.
Ah, yes. Look, I think that's a perfect – I'm glad you insisted on that voicemail. That's a perfect voicemail because I think the sense we have after three games is exactly what he said. Same crap, different year. He used more colorable language. Same crap, different year. And unfortunately, that's the way the season started. So I leave you with this, my fellow Ricoers. My fellow Met fans, this sucked. This was awful. I don't feel good, but it's only three games. And our season is not over. And I want to remind you about this because this is a big part of our existence as sports fans in New York. And I've told this story many times about all the teams I root for, that sometimes our mood is affected not just by how our team plays, but how the other team plays. Do not let, and I've learned this because this really hit me very hard in 2013, when the Nets had their first year in Brooklyn and they had a really good year, but the Knicks were better and I couldn't enjoy it. And I realized, like, Evan, just forget what they're doing. Like, enjoy your own team. So deal with our own issues. Be upset about what we're dealing with, but don't have it be worse because the Yankees had a great weekend. It really is irrelevant. I know we have to share a town with them and hear a lot about them, but be pissed because we're 0-3. Don't be pissed because the Yankees had, you know, as great of a first weekend as one could have. Keep that in mind. It'll keep your sports mental health as fresh as possible. We appreciate the interactions. Again, you could voicemail us anytime you got something on your mind, 725-222-8699, or you can email us to ricob@gmail.com. And thank you for the live audience that we had on YouTube for those that actually spent time on their Sunday night. Boy, you got something wrong with you. Think about you people if you're listening right now. You took an hour out of your time on a Sunday night to stare at our faces and listen to us bitch about the Mets on Easter Sunday night. Reevaluate your lives, everybody. I'm just kidding. We appreciate it. Download, subscribe to Rico Bronya wherever you get your podcasts. We'll be back soon. Goodbye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya Podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com?
We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.